If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast who are also trying to become writers on the new Star Trek series on CBS. I'm one of your hosts, Adam Pranica.
I'm your other host, Ben Harrison.
That intro is getting longer and longer, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean,
as we just add to our list of demands.
We want a jumbo jet, yeah. $10,000 in a duffel bag. Map that will guide us to Cuba and positions in the writer's room on the upcoming Star Trek series on CBS. CBS, excellent television.
That sounds great.
That's their slogan, right?
CBS, big fans of laugh tracks.
And so what are we holding hostage?
Seriously, like $10,000 of a ransom is like more than enough for me.
Oh,
I would be really all right for that.
Yeah.
That's like a rounding error for them.
They're not going to notice that. They got that in the fucking couches in the executive lounge.
I don't want to go to Cuba. I want to go to Toronto to help make this new show, which is where I heard they're doing it, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
God damn it.
We know someone in Toronto, don't we?
Who?
Do we know any Canadians?
Yeah, we do know a Canadian in Toronto. He's the co-host of my other hit podcast, Let's Drink About It.
That's what I'm saying. We got a place to crash if we go there.
That's true.
We'd be pretty cheap employees.
I've slept on that couch.
I bet. But you've slept on a lot of things in there. But one thing we won't sleep on is top quality writing for a hit science fiction television show coming out next year.
Yeah.
The as yet unnamed Star Trek television series.
That's not going to happen, Adam. We're going to only put top-notch words together for that series.
All right. That's fair.
So just like before we do the actual podcast, like we're talking about a ransom here. What are we holding ransom? Like we'll stop doing this podcast if we get the job?
I think the most feedback we have ever gotten has been about the use of the vetoes.
Yeah.
So maybe we threaten to just use a lot of them. Maybe we skip ahead to season 5. That'd really piss some people off, huh?
You're an asshole, Adam. just to catch people up. Because we talk about the vetoes as though everybody knows, and I feel like maybe we should flesh that out a bit. We have chosen, mostly for the dramatic tension that it creates, but also because there's a lot of fun involved in diabolically pranking each other in terms of vetoing episodes, that for every season of the show that we watch, we each get a veto, and we can choose not to watch an episode by vetoing it, and we can also choose to make somebody watch an episode by using our veto to nullify their veto, as happened in season 1.
That's right.
We are currently running a poll about some modifications to the veto system. Now, the options are we stay with the system we have, which so far has worked great because I got to nullify Adam's veto and it was hilarious to me. Or
everyone liked how that went.
Or we move to a system where if one person vetoes, the other person is stuck watching the episode alone. and has to report back book report style, essentially.
That seems to be the cruelest possible choice here.
And then is the third one that a guest comes on for such an episode? If
the
one
third one is a variation of the second choice.
Yeah.
In that the remaining host selects a guest host to do the show alongside them.
Yeah.
And that's the one that I like the least because it seems to me to be the path to replacing me as a co-host on this show, like the easiest path to that. And that's something I'd like to prevent.
I think if either of us is in jeopardy of being replaced, Adam, it's definitely not you.
Yeah, who can really say? I don't know. We're not trying to pick favorites here. This show exists with both of us or not at all, I would say. That would be my vote.
Wow, that's really beautiful, really powerful.
Yeah, you know what's beautiful and powerful, though? Season 2, Episode 9, The Measure of a Man. See, that is a championship segue right there.
Mission Log is going to be jealous of that one. Let's just say right now. You know, if they ever become aware of us.
Yeah, I don't think they'll ever hear this.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
This is one of the episodes that most people talk about when they talk about this show.
Yeah, this is a big one. This is an important episode. I think it's definitely one that was seared in my memory and, you know, probably more than any episode, even the first episode, contributes to the Lawyer Picard trope as being like one of the main takeaways of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Right. There's kind of a lot of things that happen for the first time in this episode. And I think I might begin it by describing the cold open, which is the show's first poker scene.
Yeah.
And this appealed to me greatly as a player of poker for maybe the last 15 years. This,
wow.
This scene drives me crazy. I mean, so let's set the scene here. It's a poker game. I believe it's in Riker's quarters. And he's invited Pulaski, Data, Geordi, and Worf to play with him, yeah?
I think Chief O'Brien, not Worf.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Chief O'Brien is there. And I remember Chief O'Brien being there because he said something about, like...
Time to pluck a pigeon.
Yeah.
And the pigeon being Data for how easy it's going to be to take money off of him. Data begins the scene by just sort of describing how easy of a game poker is because there's only a certain amount of outcomes and... There's only a certain amount of cards in the deck, and
yeah.
You know, for a real mathy guy like Data, he should be able to be great at this.
Yeah, he's going to Rain Man them.
He soon finds out just how nuanced the game is, because Data gets into a five-card stud game and goes all the way to a showdown with Riker, which means they're the last ones playing on the last turned cards. And Riker just straight bluffs the shit out of him at the end. With a busted flush draw. And first of all, Data's hand is great.
Yeah, he's got like ace high full house, right?
Yeah, he should have raised Riker, or at least called. But Riker the entire time is betting and then string raising. Do you know what this is?
Yeah.
A string raise is like, it's a way for me to get more information out of you by like calling and then betting in two separate actions. Which is a bullshit way to play poker. And if you ever tried to play poker like that in any poker game or in any card room, like, you will be scolded for that. Like, you have all the money in your hand that you plan on betting with, and that's how you do it. But Riker the whole time is like, yeah, I'll call you, and then I'll raise you 10 more. Like, that's bad form. Riker should know better.
Well, Riker's playing with somebody like me who is, you know, knows the basics but doesn't know like the proprieties of the game. So
he's taking full advantage.
Yeah.
And here's another thing. If you're Geordi, can't you see through those cards? Can't
Maybe
you
not.
See the changing blood pressure of one Commander Riker?
Maybe they specifically replicate cards that are like you know, shielded to Geordi's visor.
Also, Riker, get some fucking better poker chips. Like, he's playing with drugstore plastic poker chips. Like, replicate some nice clay poker chips, why don't you?
Well,
if this
you know,
is
they
a
don't
serious
have,
game.
They don't have money in this depiction of the future, and they had been playing with scarves, but it's just it really gets out of hand. You know, it's hard.
It's like playing in a dry cleaner.
Yeah, it's hard to tell like how much action is going on when you look at just a heap of scarves in the middle of the table.
Very true. So Riker bluffs the shit out of him, takes the pot down, and Data learns a valuable lesson on just what poker's about.
So meanwhile, Picard is sitting by himself in a lounge on Starbase 173. This is a pretty sweet space station, actually, that they're at. And Picard has chosen to take his shore leave solo. He's just sitting there, and he lays eyes on a nice looking older lady who he happens to know. He walks up to her and starts kind of smooth talking her. Like, it's kind of an uncharacteristic, almost Riker-esque smooth talk that Picard starts pursuing with this woman.
It's been 10 years, but seeing you again like this makes it seem like 50.
And he asks if she knows what he'd like to do to her, and she suggests
bust a chair across my teeth.
Which is like, holy shit, I cannot believe that's a line that a character says about what a man would do to a woman on a television show. Like, that is a incredibly violent image to plant in people's minds.
Oh, ain't love wonderful?
It makes me think that, is there a woman in Picard's past that doesn't hate him or doesn't have a weird relationship with him?
Boy, she has a weird relationship with him.
Yeah. Evidently, this woman, Captain Louvois, was the JAG officer who prosecuted Captain Picard after the Stargazer incident.
The Battle of Maxia.
Yeah.
Somebody tweeted us the other day a video of the Good Morning America segment that they shot on the set of Star Trek The Next Generation, like back in the 80s. And at one point, I guess it's like Joan London or somebody is in Captain Picard's ready room and points out the model of the Stargazer that he keeps in there and goes, yeah, he lost that ship in a battle with Maxia. And as somebody who knows it's a battle of Maxia, I just laughed and laughed and laughed.
I couldn't get through a minute of that. It was it was so cringy.
It was fun to see the cast out of costume at that time, because I feel like I've seen a lot of pictures of like Brent Spiner and Michael Dorn present day, but I haven't seen them not with the makeup on in that era as much.
I didn't like seeing the spell broken. You know, like, I don't like seeing Joan London on those sets. I don't like seeing the actors out of costume on those sets. I like thinking of that place as a place where the show happens with the characters that we like.
Yeah, I don't like Joan London.
It is the guiding principle of a Starfleet base. Have you not find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth? You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
Picard has a weird relationship with this lady.
You're still a pompous ass.
That is all that's been established.
And a damn sexy man.
And then a admiral wanders into this lounge and starts introducing Picard to this guy.
May I present Commander Bruce Maddox?
He's like a commander rank in a blue shirt. And this admiral's just like, oh, we got to check out the ship. You got to meet this Bruce Maddox guy. He's the greatest. And so they go ahead and beam over to the ship, and they walk onto the bridge. And immediately Data, like, you can see the hair on the back of Data's neck stand up. And he makes like really fucking intense eye contact with Maddox. And we come to find out that this is because Bruce Maddox intends to take Data apart to find out how he works. He has got like a 3-year-old attempting to figure out how a radio works plan. And his ultimate goal is to like replicate Data so that the Federation can have more of Data. So Picard convenes a meeting with Riker, Maddox, and Data. And Maddox kind of lays his case out. He says, like, this is going to be amazing. Like, we're gonna find out what makes Data tick. We're going to take him apart, put him back together again. We're going to load, you know, it's a safe enough procedure. We'll load his consciousness into the mainframe on the Starbase until we've gotten all the science we need to get out of taking him apart. We'll put him back together again, load him up, load his consciousness back in, and we're good to go. You know, low risk procedure. And they start kind of like asking him questions, and it goes, becomes pretty clear pretty quick that Maddox doesn't have a lot of the information that he should have had to make a move like this.
You seem a little vague on the specifics.
Data, like, right away zings him with a, like, well, certainly you've solved the problem of the...
how the electron resistance across the neural filaments is to be resolved.
And Maddox is like, actually, I thought I would just feel around in your insides, and I figured I would just figure it out once I got you apart. Like, the answers would become pretty clear once I disassemble you.
Yeah.
And that is not a satisfying answer for anyone.
And Adam, you know what Picard doesn't fuck with at all?
Wu-Tang Clan?
No, Adam. He doesn't fuck with bullshit. And he can tell that Maddox is full of bullshit. So he says, like, hey, like, it seems like a nice idea. Maybe you'll get your shit together at some point. Let's talk about it then. Meanwhile, I can't allow this. And like a poker player who has bluffed his way through the first several rounds of play, Maddox pulls
Listen
out his
to
winning
you,
hand.
Listen to you tying in the A and B story together.
Yeah.
How about that? Yeah, he, in your face, mission log.
Maddox pulls out a computer chit that has transfer orders, placing Data under his command. This takes all of the power away from Picard to protect Data from this nutbag Commander Maddox.
There's a couple of things that are indicating just how little Maddox feels for Data. And also, like, Maddox clearly, like, is totally in awe of Data and all that he can do. However, he calls Data it instead of he. He doesn't really talk to him. He instead, you know, talks to other people in the room about him like he isn't there.
Yeah, he really gives Pulaski a run for her money in the offensively bigoted department.
Yeah, I feel like they would be real chummy if they had met in this episode, but they don't. He wears a uniform that's maybe two sizes too small. He just doesn't look right.
And he's not, you know, he's not really rocking any neck, which you would think a real man would be doing in a small uniform.
So Data sees the writing on the wall and he's like, well, fuck this. I'm just going to retire from Starfleet. How about that? That means this Maddox guy gets to fuck off, and I guess I'm just going to go live on a farm or something. Like, that would be better than having this clearly ignorant person taking me apart and messing with my insides. Like, that's not a satisfying conclusion to this.
Yeah. And he reveals that after, like, basically the saddest scene in the history of the show, which is Data packing his couple of belongings into a little over-the-shoulder barrel-shaped piece of baggage.
This bag is so small. It's like the size of the bank teller tube that in some banks, like the drive-up bank, you put your check in it and then it shoots up and
yeah.
into the...
Or like the Heineken keg that you can buy at the grocery store and put in your fridge.
Yeah, it's real teeny.
But he's packing them up and Maddox comes in and is like tossing his dick around and he's like, hey, you're getting packed up to come be under my command. Great. Good times. And Data's like, no, you're wrong, dude. I'm bouncing. I'm out of the Federation. I'm my own man now. And Maddox like really breaks at this point. And he's like, he gets mad and he's like, I'm taking you apart whether you like it or not, motherfucker.
But keep packing, because one way or the other, you will be reporting.
I think that's the line, right?
Yeah, he doesn't seem to understand that no means no in this circumstance.
No.
And he clearly wants to take what he wants from Data. So he escalates the situation up to Captain Louvois.
Yeah.
My love is a fever.
Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around and it's like, what's it gonna be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it, and I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures. Every time you send one, do it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work. Some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean. With Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
We've established a little bit earlier in the episode that she is the, like, this is a new star base. She is the head of the JAG Corps for this sector. And it's like her and an ensign. Like, there's no legal infrastructure this far out. So when she gets Maddox's petition, you know, she calls in Picard. She hears them both out and she's like, sorry, Picard, Maddox argues basically like you wouldn't rule in favor of a ship's computer if it pulled into Starbase and refused to undergo a refit. She's like, yeah, you're right. Data's materiel. What are we talking about here? And so she pretty quickly rules in his favor. And Picard goes,
a ruling with such broad-ranging implications must be supported, Philippa. I hope you will use the same zeal that you did in the Stargazer court-martial.
And so we've got a trial on our hands.
This episode doesn't really feel like it has a lot of beats. It's just one big story.
Yeah. I mean, there's the beat of, like, Data's going away party.
Yeah, that's the next scene, right?
I think it is.
There's a going away party in 10 Forward for Data, which is kind of like a wake, because in many ways it is.
Yeah. Data is, like, carefully taking apart a present from Worf, and Wesley admonishes him that he's doing it wrong, not tearing the packaging apart quite as gleefully as Wesley would. What's your family's take on present wrapping? Do you guys rip it up, or do you kind of save it?
Everyone is a present ripper except my dad, who is a very careful unwrapper.
My childhood on Christmas morning was all about, like, my dad getting, he would, like, give us each a pocket knife, and it was, like, cut the tape really carefully, like, save all the paper, and, like, we have, like, I'm not kidding, my parents have packaging that has been in play for 15 or 20 years that still gets used every Christmas.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
There's an extreme level of environmental conscientiousness in my family home.
That's incredible.
So I was like, you. I was like really respecting Data's game. Like, it was like a real game recognized game type of situation when Data was unwrapping Worf's book and when Wesley butts in and starts trying to tell him to rip it up, I was like, fuck you, idiot.
Shut up, Wesley.
You don't know how valuable that is.
You know what surprised me about that scene was that Worf was such a good rapper. like he actually clearly took some time to cut and wrap that book properly. Like, some people are just idiots with the wrapping.
No, yeah. Worf is a man of honor.
Worf has like a gift wrap station at a department store level of gift wrapping prowess.
Yeah.
He's great.
The other thing in this scene is Geordi is bumming the fuck out. Like, Geordi is just like off in a corner by himself, like having feels, and Data comes over and, like, you know, when you're having a going away party and your friend makes it about himself and not you.
Yeah.
Kind of situation.
Yep. Yeah.
Kind of a bad move on Geordi's part.
Yeah, just another in the long and growing line of socially awkward incidents for one Geordi LaForge.
Yeah. I feel like season two is when they really decided to make him a socially awkward dude.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't really this awkward last season.
No, because they didn't give him anything to do last season.
That's true.
And now the thing they're giving him to do is some real act weird.
Darmok Angelad at Tanagra. Darmok Angelad at Tanagra.
So here's the deal with this trial. Because there are no attorneys present other than Captain thinks highly of herself.
I believe you're talking about Louvois.
Yeah. The role of defendant attorney will go to Captain Picard, and the role of prosecutorial attorney will go to the next highest ranked officer present, which is Commander Riker. So he's going to be representing Commander Maddox, whether he likes it or not.
To Riker's credit, he doesn't want to do this from the start. He's like, Data's my friend, fuck that. I'm not going to effort that side of the argument. That's a bunch of crap. And Louvois is basically compelling him to do it. If he refuses to do his best, then he loses anyway.
Yeah, which is a really fucked up position to be in.
Yeah, it's a poison pill argument right there.
But Riker takes that pill and does a pretty masterful job of arguing the case against Data, which essentially boils down to Data's a machine. He is, you know, disassemblable and reassemblable.
He was made by a person.
He was made by a person, and he can be turned off and turned back on again, which is, you know, it's done to great dramatic effect at the end of his opening argument when he reaches down the small of Data's back and hits the off button, and Data kind of like pitches over in the seat and very inhuman-looking position.
Pinocchio is broken. Its strings have been cut.
He also doesn't have an arm at that point, because at that point in the trial, Riker has taken it off of him.
Yeah.
And entered it into into evidence.
Yeah. When did Riker learn Data's off button secret? Because Data keeps it a secret.
Did Louvois take the arm with her for a little while? Just like called for a recess?
Yeah. I mean, I imagine that's one of the most sophisticated sex toys that anybody could want.
Doesn't get any better than that.
For a dude, it's a stranger's hand. For a lady, it's got a lot of settings, and it's programmed in multiple techniques.
Yeah, this is basically the atomic bomb of arguments that Riker has dropped, and Picard is pretty blown away.
Picard is so blown away, he's driven to drink.
Yeah, he's driven back to his own ship to tend forward during his recess to just sort of figure out his next move.
Yeah, he Geordi has just left, and Picard takes up his position as most bummed out dude in the bar. And Guinan is there, and she is there to, what Guinan's character winds up doing a lot is what our friend Judge John Hodgman does a lot on his show, which is find the crux. She cuts to the quick. She separates the wheat from the chaff. And she helps Picard see the whole case in a new light. It's like the dude going like, oh my God, my thinking has been so uptight about this whole case.
She cuts right to the heart of the matter because it's the heart that matters most.
Yeah. Which is why Guinan wound up having such a long career on The View.
The thing about Guinan is no one really knows what she is or how old she is.
Right.
She keeps whatever superpower she has under her robe and her hat.
Right. Like,
and she demonstrates them just very subtly. And so when she's having this conversation with Picard, you get the sense that she already knows the outcome of the argument. All she needs to do is sort of drop little breadcrumb clues for Picard to think that he came up with the idea himself.
Right, and she'll never commit to the line of inquiry first.
Right.
Or as hard as any whoever she's talking to. She knows what you're thinking before you do, essentially.
Yeah, and then she makes you think that it was your idea all along when you come up with your epiphany.
Right.
In that way, she is the greatest bartender ever, because that's all you really want.
I mean, that and a good martini.
Woo! Best martini I ever had.
And what she gets Picard to grok, finally, is that what Maddox is proposing is making lots of datas so that they can be used. And using them amounts to making a slave race and then doing whatever you want with them. And that shit is fucking wrong. That shit ain't right.
Yeah, I mean, when there's only one data, the case is far easier to make that he is unique and special and alive. When suddenly you turn the machine into a million machines, then what you've got on your hands is a production line.
Yeah.
And you lose that sense of humanity or life that Picard is arguing that he has.
So Picard goes back to the trial and unloads this super compelling line of reasoning. And it's real fun to watch. Like, it's as good as like courtroom drama gets in television, I would say. Because Picard starts with Data on the stand and interviews him a little bit and then flips the script and puts Maddox on the stand as a hostile witness and tries to get Maddox to sort of pot commit to the premise of his gambit, which is that Data is subhuman, sub-sentient, and therefore we can think of him as property. So Picard challenges Maddox to prove that Picard is sentient and that, by contrast, Data is not. And that becomes an issue. And then Picard kind of pivots and starts talking to the JAG officer, Philippa Louvois, that like she has more weight on her shoulders than she perhaps realizes.
Now, the decision you reach here today will determine how we will regard this creation of our genius.
Because the decision she makes will set a precedent. And if Maddox is successful in reproducing Data and, you know, essentially creating a race of androids, the way that she rules will determine how the Federation treats that race.
Are you prepared to condemn him and all who come after him to servitude and slavery?
And whether they treat that race as property or as another life form with all of the rights and responsibilities pertaining thereto.
So after his very compelling closing argument,
you wanted a chance to make law. Well, here it is. Make it a good one.
Louvois rules immediately.
Yeah, she does not go back to, like, she does not recess to consider her argument. That's a really good point.
Which either indicates that Picard's closing was that incredible as we both know it to be, that it just compelled her in that moment to be like, yeah, defense wins. Or she just didn't really give a fuck and was like, yeah, all right, that works for me.
Or third option, which I think is probably borne out by what happens after, Louvois is mainly interested in banging Picard and decided that she'd had enough foreplay.
Exactly. So here's what happens. Louvois rules in favor of Picard. Data is ruled as not property. Data tells Maddox
where he can stuff it.
Yeah. Like, it's a very tidy, efficient conclusion from that respect. And
also, but Maddox was like pretty cool in that scene because he was like, I'll rescind the order transferring you to my command.
He's not a total ass about it. He's not surprising. As assy as he's been the entire episode in that moment. And then we get back to Louvois and Picard talking about going and getting a drink. And here's the thing. Can we be sure that Picard didn't trade sex for Data's freedom? Because how quickly Louvois ruled and how quickly they went and got a drink, I don't know. I think something was going on here that we don't know about.
See, I take it the other way. I think that Louvois wanted Picard so bad. You know, she got real hot for him when she tried to burn him for losing the Stargazer. And that's just a fire that's been raging in her loins this whole time. She's looking down the barrel of ruling against him in this case. And she's like, nah, because then it's going to be a total uphill battle to get him into my bed. And I don't want that to happen. Like, I want this to be easy. So she's like, he's just finished like a pretty compelling argument. Like, as compelling as it needed to be for me to plausibly just give him the W and we can go bang now.
Yeah, she is done with Kor and she is ready to bang his gavel.
So I think that she has traded sex for Data's freedom.
Hmm. All right, well, that would be consistent with the scrupulous nature of one Jean-Luc Picard. He wouldn't put that out on the table, but Louvois clearly would.
Yeah. I am the cutest of all. There are four lights. Well, Adam, it's an episode with lots of firsts, and I would say that the last in a long string of firsts in this episode is the final scene when Data comes into the observation lounge to invite Riker to the celebration they're having in his honor in the holodeck, and Riker is not in the mood for holodeck.
Yeah, I'm not sure we'll ever see that again. Riker's sort of Geordie-ing out in the last scene, isn't he?
Riker's, the captain's not around, so he can't get into the ready room to use his leaning wall. So he's gone to the observation lounge to lean out, and he's really bumming out. Like, he really feels shitty for what he had to just do.
I almost cost you your life.
How fervently he had to argue against the agency and freedom of his immediate inferior and friend Data. And Data's pretty cool about this too. He's like, hey man,
that action injured you and saved me. I will not forget it.
It really, to me, like, it brought Data's friendships with Geordi and Riker into total relief. Like, the idea that Riker would sacrifice something about himself in order to save Data seems like something that Geordi could never do. Like, Geordi makes it all about him at every moment, and Riker's all about sacrifice when given the opportunity. So I thought that was pretty cool. It was a good moment for the character of Riker, that's for sure.
For sure. Well, there's only one scene that I think we definitely need to talk about that we haven't yet, which is a delicate scene. It's when Picard pulls out the little Tasha Yar simulator that Data keeps in his quarters and asks him about it in the context of court. And Data has to kind of admit that he and Yar got down.
This is one of the many pieces of evidence that that Picard admits. He basically unpacks Data's suitcase and every little thing he uses as a piece of evidence, just to sort of ask him why he thought that those items were significant enough to take with him wherever he was going.
Right.
So there's like a picture frame, and there's a book that was a gift, and then the third thing is this little hollow picture of Tasha Yar. And yeah, on the stand, he has to admit that they did it. And there's a moment where everyone looks at each other like, holy
everybody
shit.
In the courtroom clutches their pearls.
Yeah, I suppose everyone's lucky that, like, we know this show has a very clear and definite recording that they occasionally show characters to catch them up. Like, they could have shown them the sex tape and didn't. Yeah. So, they're probably lucky they got away with that one.
I'd like to see that sex tape leak online at some point, though.
With the right search terms, I think you could get there.
I am the cutest of all. You will assist us. I am the cutest of all. You are all.
Well, I thought this was a great episode. I thought every actor raised their game. And it felt, in terms of like pacing and writing and acting, like it felt like a totally different show. It was just fantastic all the way through.
Next
really
level Trek, man.
I hope we get more like this. It seems like the last few episodes have been really good.
Yeah. This is a little run of top tier Trek, and it makes it hard to joke about. But I'm hoping that our podcast remains entertaining despite the fact that we're just starting to just fall in awe of how good this show is.
Not a lot of opportunities for dick and fart jokes in a courtroom related scene. So
should we just like add a fart sound effect periodically throughout the episode?
Yeah, I think that sounds good. Did you have a drunk Shimoda for this episode?
Drunk Shimoda! Take important stuff, stack it up. Doesn't give a fuck, everybody's drunk. And Tasha Yar's getting robot humped. Ben, no! Drunk Shimoda!
I did. There's an admiral in this episode, and he's there for like two little scenes at the beginning, and then right after we've established that there's an admiral afoot, Captain Louvois announces that the two most senior officers have to be the litigants in this case, and suddenly there's no admiral.
That's a great point.
Where'd he go?
Oh, man.
He totally ghosted him.
That's not convenient for our story.
Yeah. So why was he there in the first place? Like, I guess to give, like, the weight of Starfleet Command's authority to Commander Maddox when he pulls his little chit out, but I don't know. It seems weird. Like, there was no other ship in orbit around the starbase. I don't know where this commander went. So that's my drunk Shimoda. What about you?
For me, it was Louvois, who just seemed like on the prowl.
Yeah, she definitely flirts with Picard in almost every scene until he basically says, "Stop flirting. I'm really freaked out about my second officer."
Yeah, like, she's pretty inappropriate most of the time.
Yeah.
Like Picard is trying to have a serious conversation with her a lot, and she is just sort of not having it.
Yeah. This is like,
she's just doing a lot of staring at his junk.
This is the kind of workplace behavior that gets people in a lot of trouble for the most part.
Yeah, it didn't feel like the future to me in those scenes. So what do we have coming up on the next episode?
Episode 10 of season 2 is called The Dauphin. Wesley finds romance with the beautiful young ruler of Daled IV, whose secret power could destroy the Enterprise and her crew. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
Is this an Ashley Judd episode? That can't be it, right?
No, I think that's like a few more seasons down the road.
All right. Well, whenever I think of someone that Wesley's interested in, I think of her. So I don't think I recall anything about this episode, if that's the case.
If it is the episode I am thinking of, this is like a hot little alien princess who has like a kind of a wicked stepmother that's always following her around. And then whenever they're alone in their quarters, they turn into like huge hairy gorilla beasts. They morph shapes. So she's like hot whenever she's in public, but then she's like a terrifying beast when she's alone.
She's a butter body.
That is a very offensive term, Adam.
She's a shapeshifter, is what you're saying.
She is a shapeshifter, if it's the episode of which I am thinking.
This does not sound like an episode that I would prefer to use a veto on. It doesn't sound great, which might be a good return to form for us. Like getting not an awesome episode to really slum it around in. So I'm excited to return to form.
I would not veto this one either.
Let's do it.
Let's do this one.
All right.
I also feel like it would be a little bit disingenuous for us to veto while we're running a poll about how the vetoes should work.
Right.
I mean, not that like we actually have to defer to the mob, whatever they come up with.
We can do whatever we want.
Yeah.
We would prefer that people agree with our decision.
Yeah, but we're not binding ourselves to them agreeing with us.
Right. If you'd like to talk about this episode, any other episode, or the care and feeding of our nation's veteran community, you can find us on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. I'm at CutForTime. Ben is at Benjamin AHR.
We should thank Dark Materia for our theme music, which if you search the Picard song, you can find just about everywhere.
Be sure to vote on our poll.
Yeah.
Our veto poll.
I guess maybe like the hashtag veto poll will be in play. You can just search through that hashtag.
How about greatest poll?
Hashtag greatest poll.
Yeah.
I like that. I've had a lot of fun talking about this episode with you, Adam. If people like the show, I hope they go to iTunes and leave us a nice 5-star review. We love reading every single one of those. Even the 4-star ones we like, but you know, we like them like half as much as the 5 stars.
People are sending in cool emails. It's been fun.
It has been.
People have been getting more and more chatty. That's been cool.
Yeah.
And it's been really taking away from my time to do real work.
Yeah. Well, that's. I think that's one of our main goals with this, is to distract ourselves from the ways we make a living.
Distract myself into the unemployment line.
With that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation, and also whatever this is. MaximumFun.org